Hi.
This is Take Charge Your Health with Corrine Fornari, clinical nutritionist, clinician assistant, and Carol Peterson, pharmacist.
Listen, learn, and I hope you enjoy the show. Bye.
Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health with Corrine Fornari, clinical nutritionist and physician assistant, and my co-host, Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Every week, we present you with new and creative ways to help you make sense of health information and bring it home to you and your family. With years of clinical experience between us and research into traditional and cutting-edge technologies, we give you practical information to help you take charge of your health. Welcome back, welcome back. Here we are on this clear, cold winter day. We're the first week in January. Not freezing cold, but cold enough to keep us alert. And I'm here with my co-host,
Carol Peterson.
There was something interesting. The reason why I brought up cold, there was a method to the madness.
We're going to talk about the weather
inside our bodies, the temperature inside our bodies. There was an interesting article. I'm looking through Popular Mechanics.
Wait a minute. You mean to tell me you are looking in Popular Mechanics for issues about health?
Well, I was a bit surprised, too, when I found it. But you know what? I read it, and I read it again. Then I texted to you because it was very significant what they're saying. It is not originated from Popular Mechanics, but it was posted. And it originated through Human Biology and Medicine, the magazine Human Biology, that where it was first published. And it talks about decreasing human body temperature in the United States since the revolution. And what they had were hundreds of thousands of temperature readings from the Revolutionary War and up, looking at and documenting the temperature of males and evaluating them. Through that, many years ago, through these statistics, we came up with our own body temperature, 98.6, 36 centigrade. So, and that was normal temperature. And variations from that normal temperature created various and sundry irregularities. So when I saw this, that we have lowered our body temperature, I had lots of questions. So guess who I called? I called Carol. I said, "What, Carol, what do you think about this?" So
I have questions too, but let me just start with Dennis Wilson wrote a book about thyroid, and I thought in his intro many years ago, he pointed out that your body is a whole collection of biological chemical reactions. And he said, just like in inorganic chemistry, the organic chemistry in your body will have an optimum pressure and temperature. Of course, he's focused on the temperature. And he said it's not a mistake that there is a human body temperature that's good. And that's where we found the 98.6, that metabolic processes run in your body most efficiently when you're at or near that temperature. I thought this was like the clouds parting for me. Now, we're saying, what? Now we're not 98.6, we're a whole degree less, 97.6.
So that's a very important statement, because when I saw this, I didn't really look to Dennis Wilson. I looked to Broda Barnes. And mm-hmm. Broda Barnes wrote the book, Hypothyroid, The Unsuspected Illness. And this was written in 1976. And he was the doctor who spent decades studying thyroid. And in his study of thyroid, he documents over and over again in multiple books the importance of body temperature and how body temperature affects all functions, particularly enzyme functions within the body, which run our entire body, and how the optimal temperature creates optimal health on multiple levels.
Yes, but what he would have people do would be to put a thermometer underneath their arm before they got up in the morning, before they moved at all, to get a basal or baseline temperature. And he determined with doing that, if your temperature was not between 97.8 and 98.2 before you got out of bed in the morning, you were functionally, possibly low thyroid. Now, different things can cause some aberrations in temperature that are not related to the thyroid. It could be weak adrenal support, or could be your temperature is actually abnormally high because you have some infections going on and looks like you have a normal temperature, but you're actually sick. So it's not a perfect measure, but it is a pretty darn good measure. And it used to be, there were some tests to test your metabolic rate. And I think it involved putting people in water and measuring a temperature change. It was very, very cumbersome. And probably scientifically the most accurate kind of testing you could do for your thyroid and how it affected your metabolism. And he correlated with that first test, he correlated that temperature was a pretty good assessment. So it brings the question of what's happening to us if, as a collective, and realizing we only have a certain set of people, and it's not as comprehensive as it could be, and it's only in the U.S., what is happening to us if our temperature is actually dropping?
Well, they made some comments in the study, but I think it very limited. I think it didn't really express what the consequences of what they observed. And they said that inflammation, a low-level inflammation, can bring up the temperature. And now we have antibiotics, which is blocking this low-level inflammation or infestation. So now the body temperature has lowered. But yet, when Dr. Broda Barnes worked with children who were chronically ill, and he would find a slightly lowered temperature, and he would correlate that to thyroid function, and these children would then be able to resist colds and able to resist flus. Wherever he found chronically ill people, a piece of the equation was directly related to thyroid function, right down to heart disease. Now, we know that our body works on enzymes, and enzymes are proteins. Within that equation, what we really have is a temperature gradient, and that temperature gradient is narrow. Just like Carol said, from 98.6 down to 97, and that's the way our body works optimally. It works optimally in that range for energy. It works optimally in that range for our natural immunity and resistance to disease, bacterials, and viruses. It also works within that range for building red blood cells. The bone marrow makes red blood cells. The bone marrow in our arms, our forearms, is red. And it's red because it's making the red blood cells. Where the body cools down on our extremities, our bone marrow becomes lighter color, almost whitish. And what they find, it's not making the same degree or making red blood cells. So what happens? They did there was this elegant little study many years ago where the tail of a rat was then inserted in their body. Now they have marrow in the tail of the rat. When they inserted the tail into the rat's body surgically, they found that the tip of the tail started making red blood cells. Once they heated up the tail, the end of the tail started creating red blood cells. So we know, even right down to our ability to make blood cells, it's all temperature related.
Do you remember the singer Melvina, I think it was Melvina Reynolds?
No, I don't.
Singing Popsicle Toes? Popsicle Toes?
She must have been pretty low in thyroid.
That's like a big red flag symptom of low metabolic rate, potentially low thyroid. So all of you listening out there, if you have to put socks on your feet when you go to bed, hello, you should be checking into this. This is important. Your temperature is compromised. Then I found a kind of a neat little thing I just spotted. It came from a Green Medicine newsletter, and it's talking about actually the relationship of our cells and water. We've talked about this before, the so-called energy molecule, ATP, that is created in each and every cell in the mitochondria, and it gives us energy. But one part of energy, according to Dr. Gilbert Ling, who is a microbiologist and cell biologist, I believe he came from the University of Chicago, he states that ATP's responsibility is also to heat up the cell inside the cell, and this causes structural changes in the proteins of the cell and allows your cells to form gels. And that, we've for a long time, we thought about each cell is like a little, like a balloon, right, with a membrane around it and stuff inside. But it really is a gel, more like eating Jell-O. And so when,
with the membrane.
Right. When there is not enough of this cellular energy called ATP, the gel breaks apart and you lose your cell. So that's part of all degenerating diseases. It's leading to death, it's leading to cancer, it's leading to chronic diseases. That vital part of your body being able to produce its own energy within the cell to keep the cells vital. So take your temperature. It's an important part of what's going wrong with us with our low metabolic rates.
Rhoda Barnes also wrote an entire book on hypothyroid, that's low body temperature, and heart disease. And he gave statistics of hundreds of his patients who had come in and had been diagnosed with different levels of heart disease. And he found them, bar none, across the board, in a low temperature or a hypothyroid state. And when he began to treat them, And this is one of the statistics from his book on cardiovascular disease. And we're talking of quite a few hundred people. When he began to treat them and build their body temperature up, the end result was there was not one more case of congestive heart failure in his treated group. So we really, this study confounded us. It made us look at the population. Now, remember, this is the United States, so we have no comparison with other nations, but we know that this country's health is getting lower and lower and lower overall. We have a lower health standard. We see it in our blood tests. Our blood test levels of hormones are going down, and our energy overall is going lower as a general observation. So we were quite blown away by this study, because what does it really mean? There were no conclusions. There were only observations. What does it mean? What does it mean to the individual who's coming into my office who's not feeling their best? What does it mean to the heart disease patient? What does it mean to the asthma patient or the chronically allergic patient? What does all this mean? And that's what I believe in the next couple of years we'll be talking about. What does all this mean?
This is alarming, and I think we should have a little extra word on what you're saying about how laboratory tests are being done and shifted in their normal values. So this article could be indicating that we should shift our normal a whole degree down. And one of the things that you referred to that they talked about, better treatment for infections, antibiotics, made our temperature lower. But generally, if you have an infection, your temperature is higher. And it sort of assumes that when they first started documenting this, that all the people back there had infections that were untreated. That's not right. Our immune system is very capable of treating infections if we give it good support and activity. So we have test ranges. And, you know, I was just rereading this. In some labs, those ranges that they've gotten, it's a trade secret. You don't know why
how they developed.
But in general, you have to suspect that if they are using the range of the population that they're performing the tests for, and if they have to adjust their ranges, then they may be using the very people that are getting tested. And why are they getting tested? Because there's something wrong with them. If there's nobody having any illness, they're not going to their doctor to look for something wrong with them. So the sick people are getting tested. And then those ranges decline. And I'd like to use testosterone as an example. It's like men now, like, if you have a level of 300, it's considered good enough. And I heard that it was quite normal many years ago. So I'm getting this secondhand that levels could be as high as 1,500, 2,000 was a normal testosterone. So the range now, I think, is more like they're saying like 300 to
385.
Okay, thank you.
To 750.
750, wow. So your lab range isn't even going to 1,000. So what does this mean? This means the poor guy that goes to a practitioner and his level is 300, he's being told he's just fine. But what if his younger normal was 1,500? He is suffering. And that's another thing that testing doesn't really tell you. And we have the same problem with thyroid testing. So what's the normal thyroid test? If you complain about your popsicle toes, for instance, and you go in and the doctor agrees to test your thyroid, they're going to do TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone. And what does that tell you? This is another thing I have a quibble with. often you're not really sure what the test is telling you. Even if it's done, what does it actually tell you? So the TSH test measures actually a pituitary hormone. It doesn't measure your thyroid at all. And the assumption is if your thyroid is working all right, it keeps TSH in a pretty narrow lab range. But nobody can say what the ideal lab range is. At least they're not based on good science, although some will say in the range of 1 to 1.5 might be ideal, but we don't know for sure. And the lab ranges, according to the Endocrine Society, for TSH should go 3.5 max, but some labs still have 5 as the max. So your doctor could have you come in and you look a little bit low thyroid, pale skin, bad hair, thin hair, cold hands and feet. You go in like that, and TSH comes back 4.5, and your doctor tells you you're perfectly fine. In spite of the fact you know you're not fine, you're standing right there with every symptom in the book of low thyroid, and the doctor refuses to look at you but relies on the test, which, if they were looking for an optimal range, where what gives us the best information? And that's a great debate in medical circles.
So
those are unanswered questions.
So we have the concern that this study will put of lowered body temperature be normal, and they're talking about changing the range of normal to lower it.
And
we're concerned that lower body temperature being normal will again mask more symptoms of a subclinical hypothyroid, and then it will be even more difficult to find out why people don't feel optimal. But I wanted to switch the subject to what can we do, which is where I always like to go.
Uh-huh.
I'm a functional person. And
take charge.
Take charge, person. One thing that we can do in terms of supporting our thyroid and helping our body temperature is, one, we get tested. It's always good to have a baseline. It's not a totally, completely, absolutely essential, but it's always good. And one thing that is happening, and it seems to be quite ubiquitous or within our culture, is our digestion is down. And consequently, we're not absorbing our amino acids well. We're blocking the ability to absorb amino acids. And what's thyroid hormone made out of? Amino acids.
Oh, yeah.
Amino acids, yeah. And iodine. So what would I do? One, I'd look at digestion. I would look at hydrochloric acid and support people with digestive enzymes and hydrochloric acid. Plus, I would give them a very, very, and I like perfect aminos, the protein that Dr. Minkoff suggested. It's a complete protein that's absorbed, not digested. And I like to give that. So I would give enzymes, digestive enzymes. I'd look at the stomach. I'd see if they're on alkalizers. And I would give proteins. Then I would give iodine, because Dr. Brownstein consistently finds his population is very low in iodine. And
you can't make it.
Yeah, you can't make thyroid hormone without iodine and tyrosine. And tyrosine is an essential amino acid. Then I would look at the cofactors that are important for the ability for the thyroid to function. Magnesium is one of them. Zinc is another. B2, riboflavin. We never think of riboflavin, but riboflavin is another. And selenium is essential. Uh-huh. And we know that selenium is a national deficiency. We know that magnesium is a national deficiency. So that by supporting ourselves, one, but begin by looking at the digestion.
And there's iron too before you go too far.
Oh, yes. Well, you want the right amount of iron.
Right. You don't want too much because we talked about iron overload.
Oh, yes, we did.
Ad nauseum, maybe. But if you are a perimenopausal woman and you have not addressed the issue of excessive bleeding, and there are those who have it, you get anemic and you don't have enough iron.
And then what happens? You interfere, the low iron interferes with thyroid function, which increases the bleeding and or is a causative factor for bleeding in perimenopausal people. So you've got these circles here that can create very many of the problems. I've found, you know, so many of my patients come in and they're achy in their extremities, in their lower body, achy. And I find very often that's directly related to thyroid. And by, now, if you just give thyroid, okay, so I have a patient walks in my door with a low thyroid. And they're deficient. They're deficient in tyrosine. They're deficient in selenium. They might even be deficient in iodine, and I give them thyroid. What am I doing? It's similar to giving white gas to a car. That's an old days. What happens is the car gets revved up, but you cannot maintain that rev up. So, and thyroid is not a short-term treatment. It's a long-term treatment. It's very mild. Given correctly, it's a very mild dose. It doesn't need to suppress the thyroid, but it's pushing the thyroid. It's similar to taking coffee in the morning and pushing the system. So what you want to do, or we want to do, or I want to direct you toward, is creating the nutrients in the body that maybe will slightly change. We're not talking about major change, but we're talking about a slight change that allows the body to balance thyroid, which, again, creates a major difference. We're in the middle of a conversation about thyroid function, and this was initiated by a study that was just published showing that our body temperature over the last 200 years has gone down 1 degree. So this is Take Charge of Your Health, and I'm speaking with my co-host, Carol Peterson. I'm Corinne Fernari, and we'll be right back. And we'll be right back. This is Take Charge of Your Health, and I'm Corinne Fernari with my co-host, Carol Peterson, and we're discussing the consequences of a new study published this week explaining how our body temperature has reduced by 1 degree. So we're looking at that and saying, what does this mean to us and to our health? So listen, learn, and enjoy.
I'd like to illustrate something that you're talking around, and I totally embrace going for those core issues. But I was dumbfounded to read an article about those women who took natural thyroid, whole thyroid glandular as a replacement, actually had more breast cancer. So it was confounding at first to understand how that could possibly be, because thyroid should be very protective.
Protective, preventive.
Yes, preventive. It made no sense. But I think the key to understanding that study is exactly what you were talking about, the need for iodine. Iodine is needed not only by your thyroid, it's needed by your digestive tract big time, and needed by your breast tissue and your ovaries and your uterus use up a lot of iodine. So when those practitioners put somebody directly on whole thyroid without doing exactly what you are referring to, go back and fix the problems, get the nutrients in, but you can't get the nutrients in until you digest. Well, that's why there was an issue. Even though the thyroid was given, those patients were still iodine deficient. You didn't address the underlying issue.
It's interesting how looking from different angles, when it's almost like looking into the center of a circle, and I'm on one side, you're on another side, and the mm-hmm. circle is surrounded, how it comes back to the same thing. And what we're looking at is optimal health, optimizing nutrients, and optimizing thyroid functions. Very often, by optimizing the nutrients, when you have a very subtle change, you can turn that thyroid back on and get optimal function out of the thyroid. But just like anything else, if you don't give the right fuel, you're not going to get optimal expression out of the engine that you're working with. And that's what we are. It's very, it's just cause and effect. What?
We're a little chemical factory.
We sure as heck are. Straight across the board, we're a little chemical factory that we're constantly balancing. It's amazing. Now, I wanted to switch the subject back to another article that we saw. And this article talks about this epidemic of flus that are happening nationwide. And I wanted to discuss that from, and again, look at it from multiple angles, because we have this big national, international hysteria push toward vaccines. So are vaccines going to protect us from the flu? Well, I don't think so if our body temperature is so low. We're wide open. We have we're opening the door. Open that door to allow viruses and bacteria in. We're actually welcoming them. Hello, come along. So
and start digesting us.
And so what we have here is we do have viruses. And flu virus, that this is the season. It starts in October and ends toward the end of January. Now, what can we do? How can we begin to prevent it? And then what do we do if we happen to get it? Do you want to start this, Carol?
Yes. I want to start with vitamin D because I don't think we have a flu season. We have a low vitamin D season.
Mm.
And I had seen a very interesting study on vitamin D in a nursing home. And the people who lived in the nursing home did not get a flu vaccine, but they got 400,000 IUs of vitamin D injected one time.
Whoa.
There were no cases of the flu in that particular nursing home for the following year, except that the attendants got the flu because they didn't have the vitamin D. Interesting study. There was no pre or post evaluation of vitamin D levels, but just that boost of one injection benefited those people for an entire year. Now, what happens during the winter, during the flu season, we have much less sunlight. We can't make vitamin D from our skin. We're covered up. We're cold. So it is a great time to maybe check your vitamin D, and maybe even if you are supplementing, maybe you need to take more during the winter.
I had a woman
would be taking during the summer.
I had a woman come in yesterday, and her vitamin D was significantly low. I said, you know, you're just not protected. And she said, but I'm taking it every day because I knew it was low. And I said, how much? And she's taking 1,000. And that's just not adequate to build up levels. It's barely adequate to maintain. And so we have to look at amounts. And, you know, 400,000 is so amazingly high, and particularly in geriatrics. And yet, look at the clinical benefit that came about. So number one would be vitamin 2. Where would you go second, Carol? I got some thoughts.
Okay. Well, I'm, you know, loving my hormones as usual, and I've mentioned this clinical pearl. When you have a virus, what actually happens is the signaling from your brain via a hormone called ACTH, which stimulates your adrenals to make hydrocortisone and related anti-inflammatory molecules. There is a block of the ACTH in your head. So effectively, when you have extreme aches and pain in your muscles, in your joints, hydrocortisone is almost absent. And you have access to hydrocortisone at your local drugstore, 1% cream. If I feel the first start of that achiness and total tiredness coming on, I start with a generous dose of that, maybe a half a teaspoon, a teaspoon, whatever I'm feeling like, and put it on. And it's extraordinary. Within 20, 30 minutes, all that fatigue starts to rise. And then you can continue for a day or two at smaller doses, but it should pull you out. One of the things that I see continually is people get a flu virus and it lasts and lasts and lasts for a long time. That they are taking off work, they're not feeling good, they have no energy. It's persistent. So in my mind, it's the adrenals have not recovered from this block.
Yeah, I see that also regularly. And when I come to that, or that approaches me, I go directly to IVs, and I do a high dose vitamin C IV, a hydrogen peroxide IV, and or ozone. And it's just a miraculous response to stimulating your body, your body's immune system, and knocking out the virus. It's a double hit. I'll never forget, I went to a conference and a very famous doctor who used to work with Dr. Linus Pauling put up a chart on the wall and said that curing disease is finding the right dose of vitamin C. And then he gave examples of disease, from colds to flus to Ebola, he stated, right down to and to HIV and to cancer. He said curing disease is finding the right dose of vitamin C. So when people get ill, one, if they're at home, I have them take vitamin C every hour on the hour. I also have them suck on zinc lozenges. We know that zinc, wherever zinc is, it draws and activates white blood cells. White blood cells are our immunity. So we know that infestation of the flu and the cold generally comes in through the mouth and through the nostrils. And it gets there from the air and or from the hands. So prevention is teaching our children, who are little virus factories, they pass it around, but till their immune system gets strong enough to resist it. So teaching our children to wash their hands, teaching ourselves to wash our hands, and taking zinc lozenges. And zinc lozenges are very unique, is that when you need them, they have absolutely no flavor. And the more you take them and the stronger you become, they start getting bitter till you take one and you can't choke it down.
You can't bend it, yeah.
And what is happening is the body has enough zinc. It has a
net. That's called a zinc tally test. There even is a test like that.
Exactly.
The response to a test of zinc solutions. It's very interesting.
We used to have a liquid zinc, and we'd get a little cup, and we'd put the zinc in the cup. And we'd say, drink this and tell us what you think. Well, some people would drink and say, oh, it's water. And we'd say, well, we're going to add some zinc to your protocol. Other people would drink and say, oh, that's so horrible. I hate it. And we know that they had enough zinc, and we had to not load zinc on this patient. I also love something else, and particularly for kids. I love Sambucol, and it's an elderberry. And the elderberry is they call it a Jerusalem elderberry. It was discovered in Israel. Its healing powers discovered in Israel, to be specific. And I love it because kids tolerate it. They love it. I have kids put it in a little bit of a glass and drink it and then hold it on their throat. Just hold it there as long as they can, and we're singing and whatever while they're holding it on their throat, and then swallow. It's very palatable. And you do that with vitamin C every hour till you knock this thing right out. You know, flu colds can be irritating and mild. Flus can be quite severe, irritating, and can move into the lungs. It's not business as usual when you get the flu. Oh, I've got something to do at work. Or I'm going to send the kid to school. I've got something to do at work, and nobody's there to take care of them. No, that's when you get into the situation where you have all these severe flu side effects. What you want to do the minute you get a flu or get that achiness that you're getting one, rub on the hydrocortisone. Put on a pot for soup, because you need to hydrate. That's one of the most important things to do. Dehydrated tissue have no resistance to viruses. So you put on the pot for soup, you start drinking, you take your vitamin C. I always keep a giant bottle of Sambucol in my refrigerator. It's there all year round. And I start that protocol, and then I start adding. If you do not turn around, or if it does not resolve immediately, come on in. Get an IV vitamin C. Get a hydrogen peroxide drip. Get ozone treatment. And then go home and continue this treatment And you have a protocol. You've just been given a protocol that should circumvent all the side effects and problems that you're talking about or hearing in the news, the danger. I had a woman, a model, who got the flu in October. She came to me in December. She couldn't get over it. She was so frail and weak. And I got her on an oral protocol, but it was difficult for her. She had become so slight. Her digestion was weak. And I did an IV on her. First one, then another. We did three IVs. And she said by the next week, she was healthier than she was before she got the flu. And I see that all the time. So do we need flu vaccines with the risk of extra mercury in our system, with the risk of aluminum, with the risk of formaldehyde, and the risk of squalene being injected into these little bodies, these wonderful, pure little bodies, or our adult bodies that are already stressed physically? And do we need more heavy metal stress totally available to our brains? That's a choice we each individually have to take. But we can take that choice more appropriately if we have options. And guess what? We just gave you a list of them. Hydrate, hydrate, hydrate. Wash your hands. Take your vitamin D. Take your vitamin C at a high level. Take all the minerals that you need. Make sure your thyroid has what it needs. Iodine is wonderful. Iodine is wonderful even to take if you have the flu, but it supports your thyroid. Do the hydrocortisone.
Well, I'm thinking of a few more things I'd like to throw in the pot.
Wow, let's mix it up. we'll make a flu prevention soup.
Hydrogen peroxide is really cool, and IV is super potent. But at the first sign of any cold symptoms or leading to the flu, I put hydrogen peroxide in my ears.
Oh, yes.
So you actually collect virus in your ears, and that can be the route that it's coming in. So it's amazing. You just find a dropper, use a regular 3% hydrogen peroxide that you can find in the pharmacy, drop some drops in your ear, you know, have your lay down with your one ear up, and it'll bubble away until it's done, and then do the other side. And if there's something going on, it's going to bubble. You know, if you're not having an issue, it won't bubble. And that can give you so much relief. It's unbelievable. And it's a wonderful thing to start immediately. And then I wanted to talk about something that people are probably not so aware of, is silver solutions.
Oh, yes.
Are very antibacterial, antiviral, antiparasitic, a lot of things. Plus, silver is very healing tissue. Your body is stimulated to heal when you use it. So I know for sure that there's a nice solution. It's called Sovereign Silver. You can find it in health food stores. And that can be used in nasal irrigations. It can be used to gargle with. If you have a cut or a burn, put it there too, but for the cold, do that. If you happen to have a nebulizer, you can put it in as a nebulizing solution, and that will get it into your lungs, which is absolutely wonderful.
So it seems like we've gone full circle, haven't we? With
yes.
The thyroid, which prevents diseases and builds up our immunity, and appropriate body temperature. And then to the flu epidemic that they're talking about right now, how to evaluate it and how to prevent it. Schallenberger, Dr. Frank Schallenberger always says, he says, the best way to treat a disease is to prevent it. So That's what we want to do. We want to be in the position of, it didn't come to us. Oh, it came to other people. You know, disease is very selective. You can have 10 people in an office that's small, and 5 or 4 or 3 or 7 of them get ill. But there's a percentage of them, and each office is different, that doesn't get ill. And that is because their resistance is stronger and more effective. It wasn't just random. It was very chosen, focused, and directed. So you want to be in that 3, in that 4, that happen to be in that room and don't get ill. You want your children that way also.
Oh, and I wanted to say something about, we become so germ-phobic. We've been trained to be germ-phobic. And it's alarming to me, you know, somebody sneezed by me and, you know, they're horrified that they didn't sneeze into their arm. And I go, don't worry about it. It's all about me, how strong I built my immune system, how well I've got my metabolic rate going, how much my body has the right nutrients it needs to mount a response. You have to take care of yourself. You're not dependent on other people sneezing and coughing and whatever on you. If you do the basics and keep yourself in a good state of health, that response of your body to a foreign infectious agent is really going to be minimized. And if you have one, hey, it's good. You have presented a challenge to your immune system. Your immune system responds. You're better than ever. Life is about challenges to your body. And the more you exercise those challenges to your body, the better off you are. So I never worry about people walking around full of germs that are foreign to me. The more people I meet and the more germs I can be exposed to, the better my immune system will be. And I'm horrified by all these wipes with alcohol stuff in it to wipe your hands with. And it's almost the worst thing you can do, because that alcohol strips your natural oils and the protective barriers on your skin and is not as good as your skin was. So we're actually doing ourselves a disservice. I see those things, you know, in the openings of stores and where you go out in public, they have little vending machine things, pick a wipe. That's not going to help you avoid an infection. It's actually making you a little bit weaker.
Well, it's so drying to the hands, and the hands crack.
So yeah,
now you have a real open door.
Yeah, you really do. There are some wipes that I don't have an objection to. I think I've seen some with essential oils in there.
Oh, that's nice.
Very anti-infective, and they're not going to be breaking your skin barrier because it's oily in nature. So if you really feel like you need to have something you carry around with you to wipe your hands, I think those would be beneficial. Just avoid the alcohol-based, the chemical-based things. It's not good for your skin.
Carol, we've come to the end, and it's always fun. I always learn. What a perfect thing to do on a cold winter day is to put this together and for the audience to listen to this wonderful health-giving, empowering news.
It's the time of year when the weather is cold, but we need to pay attention to how cold we are. As I said, you can have popsicle toes and it can be worse during winter. You will have it during the summer. If it's a problem, it's all year round. You just do not have enough body heat to keep your metabolic rate going at its very optimal functions. And I think that's where we have to look at any evaluation as we're talking about whatever we're doing. The outcome is the most important thing. If you're low thyroid, all those steps are important to get to a better functioning state. And if you do get ill, as we were just talking, one of the most important things you can do is be prepared. Have these things on hand so you,
yes,
you don't have to, like, oh, I can't do anything. I've just got to lie here because I don't have it on hand and I can't get up and go find them.
Yes,
be
exactly.
Be ready. Have a little home kit for just in case. And the just in case will work far better if you start it immediately. You reduce the length of time you're feeling ill. You reduce the severity of the symptoms while you are feeling ill. All of this is in the realm of very doable.
Well, we forgot one thing that I wanted to bring up. I love, and you might, I think you might also, I love oxalococcinum, which is a homeopathic.
Uh-huh.
They sell it everywhere. They sell it, it's on the counter of every health food store, almost. And if it isn't, you can ask for it, and they go, oh, yes. And this is a homeopathic, so what you're dealing with, again, is energy medicine. But you put it under your tongue every few hours until the symptoms go away. It is most effective for prevention or early stage. If your flu is well established, it doesn't really work that well. So I would add that and keep it in the house. I have everything we spoke about in the house. And it's not that I'm worried that I'm going to get the flu, but I just keep it in case any of us don't feel well. Boom, we're ready. We're ready to move. And we don't need to go out. I even have chicken soup on the stove cooking right now.
I love the chicken soup. I had this delightful cartoon on a card, and it had somebody getting chicken soup IV.
Well, it sounds wonderful because what we're dealing with is the nutrient in the soup that then goes, doesn't need to be digested. It's very easily absorbed. And when you put all these vegetables in it, you then increase the mineral content and the protein content easily absorbed. So it's all easy and available for you, and it hydrates you. And as we said, dehydrated tissue is very susceptible for virus and bacterial to enter. And the body doesn't have the defenses.
Well, you've succeeded in making my mouth water. I'm just thinking about the smell of chicken soup on the stove.
Come to lunch. So I really always enjoy our talks, our morning talks. This is something that I treasure. I treasure sharing this information with the listeners. And I also always learn when we're speaking. So thank you so much, Carol. Thank you so much for listening and sharing this time with us. I know if you have been listening, you have been gaining focus and information to help yours and your family's health. Thank you, Carol. Thank you,
thank
listeners.
You, okay, thank you.
And we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. In conclusion, I'd like to say, remember, this information is not an attempt to diagnose or a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share with you up with your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. You can hear this program in its entirety on my Facebook, Corinne Fornari, RPA CCN, or on Take Charge of Your Health Facebook page, Take Charge of Your Health. My website is fornarihealth.com. www.thebetterhealthcoach.com, and my office number is 212-219-0700. That's 212-219-0700. And I know many of you noticed that beautiful music, A Big Change. My brother's group wrote it for me. Left Hook from Redding, California. Their website is Redding Left Hook. Really special. Thank you so much for spending this time with us, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.